Chapter 20. The High Host. During the later years of the Great Crusade, Shenkai. From the mandated archives of Thrall IX/57437AJC/94DVK, assigned to Legionary Zephon.
Begin recording. My name is Shenkai, of the bloodline Ismarantha. I am 12 standard cycles old. This is the first recording in my official archive, and I am making it as we travel to Terra. I am Balforan, but I have never seen Balfora except in Picts and scans. I am Voidborn, and the child of Balforans, and so I have learned the rituals and the histories of my people. I am a slave. My parents and my mentors tell me not to use that word. They say slaves are unhappy and mistreated. Then we are not unhappy or mistreated. So we're not really slaves. I do not think slavery has anything to do with happiness. I think it is a matter of freedom to make choices. And we have no choices. The warriors of the Ninth Legion are noble and good and pure, and it is an honour to serve them. But I do not understand how they can be good and noble and pure, yet keep us as slaves. Our work is important, and that makes us all proud, but sometimes I believe servitors could do it almost as well. I also believe that we would do it even if we had the choice not to. My mentors and my parents tell me not to say these things. They tell me that in time I will no longer think like this. They also say that the great angel, our Primarch, would be saddened to hear me use the word slave. I've seen the great angel 4 times in my life, and one of those times he spoke to me. I was 9 standard cycles old, and I was crying because many of us cry when we see him. I asked my father why we cried, and he said it is because the great angel is perfect, and that looking at him feels like staring into the sun. I do not know what that feels like because I have never been on the surface of a planet and looked up at its sun. The suns we see through the darkened windows of the Red Tier are not bright in the same way. When our Primarch spoke to me, it was in the High Host's armory. The great angel was looking for my master Zephon, but my family's master was not there. That day the armory was filled with thralls working on weapons and armour, and my mother and father were teaching me the care of our master's equipment. This was the closest I had ever seen the great angel. He thanked my parents and said they did fine work on our master's war gear, and I think they were pleased, but I wasn't looking at them. The great angel turned to me because I was touching one of his wings. My parents were upset and worried because I'd done this, but the great angel smiled and crouched down and looked into my eyes. He has eyes that make you feel very safe, and as though you are not a slave at all. He stroked away my tears with his white fingers, and he said very quietly, "Hello, little one." He asked me my name, and I tried to tell him, but no words came out. My parents tried to speak, but the great angel stopped them and said, "If your parents are Aristes and Shafir of the bloodline Ismarantha, then you must be Shenkai." I did not know how he could know that, but he smiled at me as if he heard my thoughts, and he said, "I know every soul on this ship and every soul in our legion." He told me that when my apprenticeship ended, I would do the Legion proud. He said also that he was pleased to meet me. Then he said the thing that I cannot stop thinking about. I told him I wanted to be an angel when I grew up, and his smile faded, and he said, "No, you do not." I asked him why he looked so sad when he said that, and he said it was nothing. He was not sad. All was well. When he stood up, he did not just walk away. He bowed to my parents as if they were Primarchs and he were a thrall, and it made some of the other thralls gasp, and it made others cry. Everyone loved him so very much. You could feel it in the chamber. Then he left and we watched him go. My apprenticeship is finished now. It ended last month. I was presented to our master Zephon as a trained thrall, as tradition dictates. But everything has gone wrong. My master's name is Zephon, He is the exarch of the High Host. They call him the Bringer of Sorrow, because he is so ruthless, and because he is one of the sacrosanct, the destroyers, the bearers of weapons forbidden to many others. My family is honoured to serve him. I have watched footage from my master's helmet feeds many times, watching with my father when he reviews the data. During those times, I stand by the side of my father's chair, as he and many other thralls cycle through archival data on the consoles of the ship's Athenium. The remembrances that are beginning to show up on many vessels are not allowed in there because the data is sacred to the Legion. I've heard some of the remembrances complaining about this, but I do not care. It is not their place to know these things. So I have seen my master fight many times, sometimes through his eyes and sometimes through the eyes of other warriors in the High Host. Like all angels, he is beautiful, but he is not beautiful like a person. He is beautiful like the paintings and statues kept hidden in the deepest decks of the flagship. The strongest memory I have of my master in battle is from the helmet feed of a warrior called Torian. Before you see my master in the footage, you see the ground swallowed by spreading black mist. This is the poison smoke of their alchemical weaponry. The High Host have shrouded the earth with radiation from above. Now they descend into it to kill any survivors. Torian's view goes dark as he falls through the smoke shroud. You can see nothing, only the static fuzz as his boots hit the ground. Then his thermal vision resolves. There are shapes in the poison, heat blurs of the armoured men and women resisting the compliance of their world. Some of them are dying, but not all. The ones that sealed their suits in time are still fighting. The High Host cuts them down. The thermal blurs thrash, fall, and in the minutes after the footage they will go cold and dark. Torian's footage comes out of the mist. It's thinner at the edges. Dissipating, I mean. Torian comes out of it. Then he turns around. What happens next takes fewer than 3 seconds. I know this because of the runic time markers in the corner of the display. I've re-watched this moment many times. Two of the enemy run out of the death fog. The radioactive mist did not penetrate their strange armour. One of them is only halfway out of the smoke when he vanishes back into it, as if he had been sucked backward. You do not hear him scream, and you never see him again. I only know his fate from seeing my master's eye lens footage later, when Zephon grips one of the pipes at the back of the soldier's suit and drags him back, breaking the man's helmet, lets the poison into his suit, and that's how he dies. The second soldier is a few steps out of the shroud when she stops. Her back arches. Blood is suddenly on the inside of her visor, hiding her face. Either she coughed it out or vomited it up. I do not know. It is hard to see the blade that has come through her body and out of her chest, because the toxic cloud has darkened the steel. This is something the High Host's weapons do, and we are trained to clean their weapons and armour with special gloves and suits of our own, if they have used their destroyer weaponry in a war. My master's sword is also hard to see because its power field is off, and there is only one reason an Astartes does that. It is because they do not want their enemies to die instantly. They want them to feel a slower death. The second soldier falls to the floor, and my master walks from the poison cloud. His red armour is black with destroyer scorchings. While the woman is dying at his feet, he speaks with Torian, giving further orders. You can hear the vox sparking with the congratulations sent by other captains. Then my master turns and his turbines cycle up. He jumps and his jump pack flares and he is gone again. And that is Zephon. At least that is who Zephon used to be. He has not been that man for many months now. Before going to the Apothecarian last week, I went with my father into the deeper decks. My father says the most beautiful art in the entire Imperium stands in shadow, deep down in Blood Angel's warships. When I ask him why the Legion does not display its treasures, he says it is because the angels are not vain, that they do this work for themselves, not for others. We passed beneath paintings of alien landscapes and cities. There were statues made from stone taken from many different worlds, and some of the statues are carved to look like animals or monsters or the Emperor, and some are carved to look like shapes that do not always make sense to me. These are abstract. I know that word. I'm not stupid, even if I do not always know what the statues represent. I saw sculpted maidens and barbarians and aliens. Many of the aliens were shown in poses of nobility, not defeat. It is strange to show the enemy in a way that makes you admire them. I saw paintings of Balfora, and my father said they were unnerving and fascinating because they are Baal from warriors' distant memories, sometimes over a century ago. So the burned earth looks different to the reality. I've never really seen Balfora, so I cannot say what is truly different. But there are others that say the same thing, and they carve statues that look tormented or paint scenes of dying worlds. When I said this to my father, he said, "Exactly," as if this answered everything. I saw a mural of sculpted faces, and they all looked peaceful except for the bands of iron wire over their eyes like blindfolds. This was by the apothecary Amastis, and my father said he does this to mark the deaths of his brethren. I saw three orbs sculpted with deep slashes, cradled in an invisible anti-grav field. This was by the warrior Nasir Amit. My father told me it was the rise of three moons on a world called Eurysia that must have meant something to Captain Amit. I saw many renditions of the angels themselves, because so many warriors paint their brothers. Many of these are in moments of peace, when the angels wear their togas or robes. I saw a painting of Daramir, of the Angel's Tears, standing in his robes, one arm raised as he speaks during a Legion symposium. This was by the warrior Hecat, who always paints his brothers and always in poses of gentleness and calm. When I asked my father why, he said that it was because Hecat wanted to capture what was within the other warriors. There are many hololithic recordings of musical performances using every instrument you might imagine, and many I am unfamiliar with. Sometimes there is no recording at all, just a chamber where a song will play in the dark. My master is not a painter, or a sculptor, or a poet. His art plays in an empty antechamber. You hear it when you walk in, the soft sounds of a piano playing alone. This was the room my father brought me to, and he closed his eyes as if he could hear something in the notes that I could not. I did not like my master's music. It sounded very sad somehow, and it kept making me think of my failures in training or my arguments with other apprentices. Sometimes he played many notes in a kind of tumbling harmony, and other times he let the longest notes ring on and on. I told my father I did not like the music, and that it made me thoughtful and sad, and he said that was why he brought me here before my presentation. "To make me sad?" I asked, because that made no sense to me. "To show you what our master has lost." I did not understand then. It only made sense when I was presented to Zephon later that day. It was supposed to be my presentation to him, but he did not care. He barely looked at me. It felt foolish to be presented to him in the apothecarium, but that was where he was confined almost all of the time after his injury and the many failed surgeries that followed it. Instead of my formal presentation, we saw our master's last act as exarch of the High Host. He gave the order from a bed in the Red Tears apothecarium, and that command was to promote Sub-Commander Anzarel. My master's bionics had failed again after another reconstructive surgery. They wouldn't fuse right with his nervous system. His legs malfunctioned, and his arms shook, and his fingers wouldn't close on command. Anzarel accepted the rank, but he refused the offer of Zephon's sword. My mother is Zephon's weapon-bearer, and she was the one to bring the blade to our master's bedside when he ordered it. But Anzarel refused the honour of taking it. "I will hardly need it on Terra," my master said, "and I cannot wield it any more, even if I had to." Anzarel looked surprised, and my parents later told me that our master had never spoken to any of his warriors in such a tone before. Temper is something the Legion focuses on controlling. You can always see it in their eyes if you look carefully, but they say it is something to overcome and not indulge. My master tried to give the blade anyway, but his bionics misfired, and he threw it harder than I think he intended. Anzarel caught it and looked at the ornate hilt and scabbard for several seconds. The moment should have been emotional, but when he spoke his thanks, there was no dignity in any of it. I thought it was over, and I wished it had been. But then Anzarel spoke. "Sir, my first act is to speak with the voice of the High Host." My master was clenching his teeth. I do not know if it was because he was annoyed or because there was still lingering damage to his muscles. "Yes?" "Sir, stop addressing me as sir. You outrank me. You are Exarch of the High Host now, and I am a cripple in a Medicaid bed." "Zephon," Anzarel said, and it was strange because his name like that sounded awkward and shameful. "The High Host bade me make its wish known. The regiment appeals to you that you might take one of the other positions offered by..." He didn't finish because Zephon wouldn't let him. "Get out!" My master tried to dismiss Anzarel with a wave of his arm, but his metal hand refused to unlock from a fist. For a moment I was sure Anzarel would stay and defy him. And then what? Would my master rage at his sub-commander from where he lay helpless on his Medicaid slab? But Anzarel didn't refuse. He saluted and left and took the gifted blade with him. In the silence afterwards, I thought my master might acknowledge me as tradition dictated, but instead he looked at my parents and ordered them to get out. They did, and of course I went with them. That brings us to today, and the journey we are on. Zephon has been assigned to the Crusader Host. We are aboard a transport ship on the way to Terra. The Crusader Host is an honour guard of Legiones Astartes warriors stationed on the throne world. It is supposed to be a diplomatic post. The legionaries are ambassadors of their legions. My master does not consider it an honour. He says it is a conclave of exiles and failures. The expeditionary fleet has offered him other stations, training positions, military advisor roles, ranks of council. Other stations I do not really understand beyond knowing their titles. He was offered command of a legion warship, the cruiser Tacit Canticum. Mother and father believed our master would accept it because this was his chance to remain with the legion and to fight with them. Mother said it would be his chance to remain who he was in the face of who he's become. But he refused. Instead, he accepted a place in the Crusader Host. When I asked why, my father said it was because Zephon would no longer have to see himself reflected in his brother's eyes. My master did not give his refusal to the great angel in person. He sent his decision as shipboard scripture, just cold text on a screen. The great angel returned a message requesting my master's presence before departing for the Crusader Host. But my master ignored the great angel's wishes. We waited for our master by the shuttle in the Red Tier's secondary portside docking bay. When he arrived, he was limping because of his bad bionics, and although he tried hard to look cold and angry, you could see in his eyes that he was upset. "Thankfully, there are no farewell theatrics," he said to my father. We had expected the High Host to be present, maybe, to salute him and wish him a good journey. There was only us, and the deck crews, and the servitor loaders, and the usual disorder of a flight deck. "Board the shuttle," he said, and we did. We carried our own possessions, and the servitors carried my master's gear in crates. But there was a final farewell, and we only saw it once the flight was underway. I was the one to find it. It was in one of the crates in the cargo hold, a sealed metal case. It had the Legion sigil, and also the mark of the High Host, which is a burial mask with open black wings. I knew what it would be as soon as I saw it. "What are you doing, boy?" My master's voice made me jump, but I did not try to hide my curiosity. I told him I was looking through the cargo to see everything we had brought, and that I was allowed to do it, since I was a trained thrall now. He saw the closed case, and he also knew what it was. You could see it in his eyes even before he said it. "My sword."
"I think so, Lord."
It was surely his sword. Anzarel had returned it to him, sending it with him away into exile.
"Fools,"
my master said of his men. But he sounded very sad when he said it, not angry. Doubtless they believed this was a kind gesture. He opened the crate to see if we were right. But we were both wrong. It was a sword, but it wasn't his sword. It was cushioned in red velvet, and it was even nicer than the blade he gave to Ansriel. Immediately I thought not of the weapon in battle, but how it would feel to clean it, and what it must have been like to make it. The hilt was reinforced Martian gold, and had the crafts mark of the Ninth Legion's Master of Artisans. I'd never seen a blade so precious, this close. Along the silver blade was a flowing stream of Enochian runes. They were inscribed into the metal with acid, and they were perfectly neat. Spiritum sanguis was what they said. The Gothic translation is spirit of blood, but that is only half right. It is a prayer or a blessing, more than a name. The blade was a promise that my master carried the spirit of the Legion with him. I realized this was why Sanguinius had wanted to speak with him before he departed. The great angel wanted to give him this masterpiece. Most likely the High Host had petitioned for its creation, or perhaps even the Primarch himself had ordered its forging. "This is a princely gift, Lord." I was trying to be brave, and to show him that he did not frighten me. "I have no need of the Legion's charity, nor their pity. When we reach Terra, place this in storage."
"Lord?"
I was not sure I heard him right.
"Do not make me repeat myself, thrall."
And there was a hesitation there, because even though Astartes have perfect memories, he did not know or remember my name, because he did not care. My master let the case fall closed and left me alone in the cargo hold. And that is the end of my first report. We will reach the throne world in 1 month. My master will begin serving in the Crusader host. I know I am supposed to love him, but I do not. He is like a broken blade that cuts you if you try to clean it. I hope he finds comfort on Terra, even if he is denied his music and his art and his brothers. End recording.